Okay, so that was the formal beginning of the winter retreat, very traditional taking of the asking of for forgiveness, which is a ceremony we do on many different occasions. Entering a retreat, finishing a retreat, entering of the rains, going and paying respects to senior elders. It's a traditional way of paying respects, and in particular, starting everything with a clean slate, which is a beautiful thing to do. It's also for just in any occasion, or with whether you're a lay person or a monastic, it's a handy thing to have in your back pocket for doing something beautiful. And then the taking of dependence on the teacher, so that making that formal intention to rely on the teacher for training and guidance and for teachings, and in the broader sense of this winter retreat, of course, I'm the most senior elder, and have been requested to take a more active role this winter retreat, but also the other senior elders are here, and they will be giving guidance and instruction, and it's just opening oneself to the instruction and guidance of teachers and those with experience. But also in that formula for asking for dependence, and it's also, there's a sense of mutual dependence, because of just that recognition that, as, say, teachers, students, as human beings, we live dependent on each other, and in order to help and guide and support and encourage, and it's a two-way street to be able to reflect on that, recollect that, and to just being here to help and support each other during 3 months of retreat time. It's a great opportunity. And then certainly just the monastic community relying on the retreat crew. The retreat crew made a great commitment to help out and support the retreat. So these are mutually beneficial relationships that you build as a retreat begins and carries on. And hopefully even out of retreat. But it's, these are the formal sort of structures. And even though I myself, and Ajahn Kurudamo, to a lesser degree, we are back for the retreat, I don't think either of us have really landed yet. It's been a few days since we arrived, and jet lag and tiredness, and I myself sort of getting over a really nasty bout of bronchitis and left me tired. So, say the theme of this retreat is going to be the foundations of mindfulness, and the meditation that we just had was hardly a stellar example of foundations of mindfulness. I made it through. I didn't fall out of my chair anyway, so hopefully I will be more present as we continue. And as I said, the theme was chosen to be the four foundations of mindfulness, and this is I think a great theme to explore and work on. It's the essence of the spiritual path of Buddhism. And of course, the Buddha himself placed tremendous importance on the cultivation of mindfulness, It comes up over and over and over again how, I mean, of course, there's a few themes that are really central to the Buddhist teachings. Four Noble Truths, Four Foundations of Mindfulness. Four Foundations of Mindfulness include the Four Noble Truths in the contemplations on Dhammas. And the Buddha makes quite a bold statement in his discourse introducing the Satipatthana Sutta, the discourse on the foundations of mindfulness. And the Buddha says, this is the direct path for the purification of beings, for the overcoming of sorrow and lamentation, for the disappearance of pain and distress, for the attainment of the true method, and for the realization of Nibbana. So that's it's a very bold kind of statement. It's quite an emphatic statement in that sense of this is the direct path. Ekayana mago, another way of translating that one is direct in that sense of this is straight, straight to the point, straight to the essence of what the Buddha is teaching. And I say another way of translating is a path going in one direction only. I mean, that's fleshing it out a little bit, but it's purification of beings, just the freeing the heart from greed, hatred, delusion, being able to liberate the heart from its biases and its attachments, and being the overcoming of sorrow and lamentation. This is not to increase one's suffering. This is not to make yourself more miserable. This is to really overcome and free the heart from its tendencies for sorrow, sadness, lamentation. If you're practicing Four Foundations of Mindfulness and getting depressed about it, then there's something that's not quite on track. And so just being able to reflect on that and say, how am I holding this? What am I doing? What's happening here? The attainment of the true method. I mean, in the sense of this is a path that through experience gives results. Being able to be well established in mindfulness rather than being established in the mind that proliferates and gets entangled in its views or its attachments. That is the method that takes one away from the tendencies, and it's a path that works. It is interesting on this. Nowadays, mindfulness is a bit of a buzzword out in the world, and there's mindful everything these days. But they've done a lot of research, and it's been tested, and it's definitely one of the results that it's shown is that it really helps people with, say, like depression, with tendencies to stress and anxiety, and so that being able to use it skillfully, learning the skill of cultivation of mindfulness, and of course, that has a very beneficial worldly effect, but also it has the application of refining the heart, refining the mind, refining the ability to attend closely to what we're doing, rather than being distracted. And we all know about distraction. I mean, we're pretty accomplished at getting distracted, and so that having the tools to really free the mind from that distraction and to work on them, because it is a training. It isn't sort of a one-shot deal. It is a nice idea that you apply and then everything sort of all of a sudden turns rosy. This is a training that you have to be patient with as well. You have to be alert and attentive to. You have to use your powers of discernment and that ability of the mind to be aware and present is a refuge for the heart. So that learning how to take that refuge, and also just recognizing that mindfulness is very nuanced. There tends to be a common understanding, I would say common misunderstanding, you know, mindfulness being like, some kind of attention, solely in like this present moment awareness, like you're just really focused on the present moment. No, not really, because, the present moment encompasses, you've got a perspective on the past and the future, and how to be clear, or the kind of bare attention where you're not really considering anything, and other than just focusing attention on one point, the point of the breath or one's meditation object. No, not really, not at all. It's much more nuanced than that. It's subtle. It's a so-called bare attention is a misapplication oftentimes. Yes, of course, you're not proliferating or just distracting yourself, but it's not so, one-dimensional. And because when the Buddha himself describes mindfulness in the Satipatthana and any discourse where he references the foundations of mindfulness, he always points to different qualities, four different qualities, and they come up all the time. And in the Pali is Atapi Sampajano Satima Vinaya Lokeya Bicha Domanasa. And the quality of Atapi is a word pointing to effort. And again, this is sometimes mindfulness is sort of some effortless awareness sort of thing. Well, no, you gotta apply some effort. Atapi is actually, Ajahn Jeff translates it as ardent, which is a good translation, because even the word ardent means there's some fire there, some fire, some heat, there's some action going on. They're ardent, ardency. And when it's translated into Thai, they don't try to just find one word. It's the effort directed to the burning up of defilements. Which is a nice image to be reflecting on. You sort of, how do I burn these things off? How do I not get caught by them? So that there is effort applied, and one has to learn how to direct effort. One has to learn how to modulate effort, because it's not just whenever you speak of effort from a Buddhist perspective, it's not how. Quantitatively, how much you do, it's more the quality of what you do, attuning the sense of when, whatever effort there is, that is for the arising and maintaining of wholesome, skillful, beautiful states of mind, that's right effort. Or any, whatever effort that you put in for the restraining and relinquishing of unwholesome or unskillful states, that's right effort. So it's more in terms of how the effort is directed and what it's used for. So it takes mindfulness. You have to be attentive. You have to be alert. You have to be present. And that's the meaning of the second quality. Atapi sampajanya Sampajano is oftentimes translated as clear comprehension, the old translation. Ajahn Jeff translates it as alert. Bhante Sujato translates, I like his translation a lot. He translates it as situational awareness, which is really good because that's what it really is. There's like a awareness of situation that one is in, and then how to deal with it, how to use that clarity and attention to work with the different situations that we're in. And classically in the commentaries, there were four different kinds of clear comprehension. There's clear comprehension of purpose. So just knowing, okay, what am I doing here? Okay, oh, I'm sitting and watching my breath. Okay. You know, rather than, drifting or sitting, waiting for something to magical to happen. If I sit here long enough and something magical will happen, no. You have to have that clear comprehension. What am I trying to do? How do I do this? A clear comprehension of suitability. And in a sense, okay, is this working? Is it suitable? I'm putting forth effort, but is it giving results, or is it suitable for the task that I'm want to undertake? Is it appropriate or not? And sometimes we take on resolutions and determinations out of idealism, and yeah, maybe in the books it looks good, but. It's not suitable. It doesn't work for us. It's not really giving the results. And you're just tying yourself to an ideal or an idea of what you think you should be doing or what results you should be getting. And we tend to live in our idealized version of what we are, what the practice is. And paying attention to what is suitable. There's a clear comprehension. And this is one of the qualities that the Buddha points to as a quality that is used in all circumstances on the cultivation of the path. This is in other discourses and teachings. But yoniso manasikara, this wise attention, skillful consideration, wise reflection. I mean, it's translated in many ways, but it's that reflective quality of the mind. Because you can reflect or consider or attend carefully, and it's not just the thinking mind gabbling away. Is this suitable? Is this working? Is it helpful? Is it beneficial? Is it not beneficial? What's the obstacle here? And it's a mindful application of your attention and your ability to reflect and consider. The third quality of clear comprehension is clear comprehension of domain. And that's sort of like just knowing time and place. What's the right time and place? And so that somebody might find, doing mindfulness of breathing, and they find that it's really helpful from time to time to do deep breathing. Now, there's a Burmese method where they do this over and over again through it. And how we practice, okay, the right time and place would be in your kuti by yourself, not when you're gathered in, silent meditation hall, and then somebody decides to do sort of deep breathing exercises, or doing pranayama or something. So, it's like awareness of time, a clear comprehension of domain, or a time and place, circumstance, situation. And the last one is quite broad in the sense of clear comprehension of, Jinjeff translates it as, of reality. And the Pali is asamoha, which is kind of a freedom from delusion. So that a clear comprehension, what would it take to be free of delusion? What would it take to be free of the trappings of self, the kind of the machinations of the eye-making, the mind-making, the kind of underlying tendency to conceit and self-obsession? So that's clear comprehension. We have to learn how to step out of those proliferations of me and mine. And when we do that, it's incredibly peaceful, incredibly clear. So this quality of clear comprehension, sampajanya is a clear comprehension. So atapi sampajano satima. And satima just means possessed of mindfulness. So possessed of mindfulness, possessed of a clarity of attention, being able to sustain attention, but it's not this ultra-focused kind of, that's not what mindfulness is, not ultra-focused. It's focused on what helps one be free from dukkha, free from suffering, free from sorrow and lamentation, free from pain and distress. So it's got a purpose, and so learning how to pay attention, because sometimes it does creep, that the ideas of, so if I really had mindfulness, I wouldn't get distracted. Also, then we just try to clamp down and force the mind not to move, and it isn't how the mind works. In order for the mind to stay on an object, it actually has to be happy with it. It has to actually enjoy it, has to delight in it, and to be mindful of what is actually helping the mind to be happy and contented within itself. So that's staying with the breath, staying with a theme, so whatever. And then the last quality, Vinaya loke abhijha tomanasa, so leading away from greed and distress. So it's like the mindfulness is what leads us out of the world of attraction and aversion, of liking and disliking, of that kind of approving and disapproving, of the world or of the self, of others. Just not getting caught in that realm of, kind of judgment and reactivity. So this cultivation of mindfulness, so as a theme, to me is just such an important one to get a good foundation, because the whole path is encompassed in these straightforward teachings that the Buddha gave. And we'll have the winter retreat to explore all the different themes and foundations of mindfulness, or as Ajahn Jeff translates it, the frames of reference, which is a good, to me, that's a really good translation, a way of holding it. These are frames of reference of how we view ourself and our experience of the world around us. So I just encourage people to pick up the themes of the retreat, pick up the opportunity to have a more sustained attention on the more formal aspects of practice, and to not get too tied in knots about how you're doing and what you think you should be doing, and just taking the opportunity to enjoy 3 months of retreat time. It's sort of like when Ajahn Sumedho asked Lumpo Cha, after being with him for a couple of years, he said, what is meditation really? And Ajahn Cha's response, meditation is a holiday for the heart. And he's just struggling away. And, you know, we do that ourselves. And we get caught in all different ways of struggling and entangling ourselves in unnecessary complication. And just sort of say, I've got this opportunity of a holiday for the heart. So offer that for reflection this evening.